This is Donald Hossig with Grassroots Environmental Protection Radio. Joining me today is Dr. Carol Kwiatkowski with the Endocrine Disruption Exchange. Hi, Carol. How's it going?
Good. Thank you, Don.
Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes, you did.
Wonderful. What my big question for Dr. Kwiatkowski today is, what harm is being caused to the people of the world, to Americans in particular, but everyone here, the humans here on the planet, what harm is being caused by endocrine disrupting chemicals? And if you want to just give us this quick definition of endocrine disrupting chemicals for the people that aren't familiar with the EDCs, and then we could just go to describing some of the harm that's being caused by exposure to these chemicals.
Okay, no problem. It's fairly complex, but we'll try to be straight to the point. Endocrine disruptors are chemicals that interfere with any aspect of hormone action. And so it really is about your hormones. What a lot of people don't understand is how many different hormones there are in the body, not just estrogen, testosterone, things
okay.
that are commonly known,
now,
but insulin,
let's talk about
thyroid hormones. And, yes, I'll get straight to the harms. So the hormone system is your body's chemical messaging system. And so it is connected with all your different organs and glands in the body. And therefore, the harms that can be caused are related to all different aspects of your physiological system. The outcomes of harm caused by endocrine disrupting chemicals include everything from infertility to undescended testicles, low sperm count, cancers like breast and prostate and testicular cancer, endometriosis, polycystic ovary syndrome, behavioral and neurological outcomes like autism, ADHD, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. There are also metabolic outcomes, diabetes and obesity, thyroid disorders, and asthma, autoimmune disorders, all of these sort of modern threats to human health that the rates which have been skyrocketing in the last couple decades.
Okay. Let's talk about the endocrine disrupting chemicals themselves now. Give some names for these chemicals and start sharing with the listeners how people, you know, the average everyday person, you know, not somebody that's working in an industry or a place where there's heavy chemical use, just the common average public kind of exposures, the names of the chemicals and how the people are being exposed to these chemicals.
So you want, from me, you want sort of a list of the types of chemicals so people are familiar with that.
Yeah, some of the chemicals that are known to be endocrine disrupting and that, you know, there's lots of science that is showing that there is harm from this kind of exposure.
Yeah, well, a couple of the real poster child chemicals, because they've been shown to have harms in across the board in all these different systems. One of them is bisphenol A, which is the hard plastic chemical that's in water bottles and sippy cups and things like that. It's also in can linings. It's extremely widespread around the world. And so that's one. There's other.
So the way people get exposed to this chemical,
yeah,
the bisphenol A, is by just eating food and drinking water.
Yes, and also it's kind of interesting. It takes a scientist to figure out how we get exposed to these things. And one of the things they've discovered more recently is that you get exposure through touching things that are made out of plastic and things like thermal receipt paper in your cash register receipts are coated in bisphenol A, those shiny ones that you can draw on with your fingernail. And those bisphenol A molecules come off onto your fingers, and then that hand-to-mouth behavior, which even adults have a lot more of than we think, brings that chemical into your body, and not only into your digestive system, like when you eat and drink, but directly, like sublingually, into your bloodstream. And so that's one of the routes of exposure that we're learning more and more about. But really knowing the route of exposure of the different chemicals takes quite a bit of research to figure it out. I know you're concerned about dioxin. That's another poster child chemical for as an endocrine disruptor because it affects so many different systems. And that one is primarily through food consumption that you get it through animal fats. And then there's a whole host of other endocrine disrupting chemicals. There's pesticides, flame retardants, antibacterial chemicals, a lot of different industrial chemicals. I'm sure I'm missing some. and
Carol, as far as the flame retardants go, these are, say, bromated flame retardants, just losing the PBE, polybrominated diphenyl ethers. There you go. I'm glad I had the acronym. Those chemicals, is there a lot of real solid science on demonstrating that those particular chemicals are causing, cause endocrine disruption? Because these are relatively newer chemicals, and I'm just wondering, and they're still in use, so it's a really big deal that those particular chemicals of the persistent organic pollutants, is there a lot of science, or is it just that they're assumed to cause this, such since they're similar to dioxins and PCBs, or where does that stand?
I'm not an expert on the polybrominated diphenyl ethers. I really can't speak to the specific science on them. Yeah,
okay.
I know that's true of the dioxins, the PCBs, and they're similar, but I don't want to overstep the bounds of my knowledge. Yeah.
Yes. So speaking of PCBs, are PCBs, are the level, what I'm really trying to get at with this interview is the amount, it's not possible to really quantify it as far as, the actual number, but let's talk about PCBs. The PCBs that are in food now that people get exposed to, these PCBs that are dissolved in animal fat part of the food supply, and the people eat these foods, the dairy products with the animal fat, the ice cream, the cheese, the whole milk, the meats, the fish, when people are consuming that food and getting these PCBs in their body, are those PCBs causing endocrine disruption to the extent that people are getting sick?
Well, tying that cause to the effect is very complicated, in part because exposure to these chemicals at the low levels that we're exposed to them is particularly damaging when it happens in the womb as our bodies are developing. And so if you are exposed in the womb and then later on you have, you're hypothyroid or you get cancer or you have neurological problems or immune problems, which are all caused by PCBs, knowing that was from your PCB exposure when you were also exposed to all the other endocrine disrupting chemicals is complicated. So they look at the animal literature for that. And they do find that there are effects at very low levels. I mean, I think dioxin is one of the chemicals that goes down to some of the lowest levels that we know of. But the reason that the endocrine system is so important in this respect is because it's optimized to function at these really, really low levels. So your hormones have their effects in parts per trillion, which is, I don't know if you've heard this 100 times already, but if you took 20 Olympic-sized swimming pools, which it's hard to even imagine, and put a drop of water in it, that would be one part per trillion. And so just tiny, tiny amounts, and that's why they're of such big concern, is because it's possible to show effects at those low levels, and we're being exposed to chemicals at those low levels, but tying the cause and the effect directly to each other is a huge, long, complicated research project.
That leads me to the another part of our discussion here. It seems to me like the clear thinking on when it's clear, as you say, these diseases are skyrocketing, the autism, the cancer, the diabetes, these diseases are rapidly increasing. I read a report by WHO on the state of the scientific knowledge. I think it was the name of the It was about the knowledge that exists from science on endocrine disrupting chemicals. And that was the point was being made, that these diseases were rapidly increasing. And it was so clear that this was highly, highly likely to be caused by the endocrine disrupting chemicals. So to me, it would make sense that there would be information being provided to the public about the poster child, for sure, the BPA and the dioxin and the PCBs, as well as some of the other higher up there in the realm of concern, endocrine disrupting chemicals, like the flame retardants, that this information will be set before the people, the public, the people that are getting these diseases in these large numbers, so they would have the opportunity to, even though you can't say, well, it was in this particular case the PCBs that caused the problem, but that you can say it was the endocrine disrupting chemicals that caused the problem, and then it makes such reasonable, it's the only way to deal with it, sense to warn people about the major chemicals in that group that people are being exposed to regularly, so that they would then have the opportunity to start cutting back on their exposure to the whole group of endocrine disrupting chemicals without having to go as far as having this fine detail of, you know, which particular ones cause which particular disease, because it's not possible just to discern that.
Well, that's an interesting concept. I think what you're getting at is something along the lines of a global or a national campaign against endocrine disruptors, sort of like we know about lead and exposure to lead and arsenic. I mean, there aren't too many chemicals that they've done that with. But, you know, putting them all together in this class of EDCs to create an educational campaign, I think, would be an amazing idea. I'm sure you know there's a tremendous amount of pushback from the industries that create these chemicals, and that's what's slowing down the progress on creating any laws, you know, to ban or regulate specific chemicals. But as a class and in terms of an educational campaign, I think that would be a wonderful idea. We're doing at TEDx, we're doing everything we can to get that sort of information out. And more groups are sort of getting groups that have handled other environmental chemicals are now looking at EDCs and putting out more information to the public on them. But it's true that there is, I think because it's come from the science and it is so complex, it's taken a long time to get to the point where you can get those very simple, specific, targeted messages. That WHO report on the state of the science is very well done, but it's a booklet. You know, it requires quite a bit of reading. But to simplify that down to like a pamphlet or a logo and something that gets out into the public eye really hasn't been done yet and needs to be, in my opinion.
We're kind of hoping that right now the CDC, the Agency for Toxic Substance and Disease Registry, they have been in dialogue with our group Cancer Action New York now for several years, and it's come to the point now where we have a solid demonstration of intention. You know, the work plan includes now educational materials designed for educating the general public on the subject of minimizing exposure to the persistent organic pollutants. So we're real hopeful that a step like that being taken by Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will lead other governmental entities such as the Natural Cancer Institute and the EPA and the FDA to follow suit as well and start at least doing some just straightforward education of the general public about the harm that is being caused by the persistent organic pollutants. And it is largely their endocrine disrupting effects that are the harm that they're causing. And so we're hopeful about that little piece of the group, the overarching group of the endocrine disrupting chemicals being addressed might lead to work on the bisphenol A coming directly from the federal government and then trickling down to state governmental health entities. And it's a big change. Like you say, there's a lot of pushback, but it's becoming clear that as the grassroots people express their interest in seeing this kind of information, that then the government does go along. Government takes its role up and works on this because it's not being only pushed on that one side of the corporations and trying to hold off that educational outreach.
I think it's true that is going to start happening more and more, that there's been a lot of difficulty with trying to get regulation of a particular chemical, but the education of avoiding exposure is starting to come out more and more. I was very happy to see that some of the groups that advise pregnant women, like the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, also the Royal College of OBGYNs, have started to come. They got a lot of flack in the press for it, but they've come out with recommendations for pregnant women, and really they should apply to everybody, but it's talking about using fresh foods rather than processed foods and reducing animal fats and staying away from fragrances and all these things that help people avoid EDCs, basically. And I think taking that next step of really what you're talking about is the precautionary principle. You know, regardless of whether or not the science is perfect on a particular question, have the caution of taking the steps to avoid exposure in case. And I think that's where most people in the general public would draw the line. They're not waiting to know exactly what chemical caused which effect. They're willing to say, okay, I'll scale back on what I'm doing so that I can protect myself and my family. And so we need to respond to that with educational materials.
Yeah, what I've kind of tried to distill my message and thinking on this, and it truly does come down to minimizing exposure to harmful chemicals. We know these chemicals are harmful. There's not an absolute certainty to the extent which any one particular one of the group at a particular lowest level is a problem, but there's so much knowledge about serious harm taking place from all the chemicals together, you got to do something. It just makes a lot of sense to start minimizing exposure to the worst, say, as dioxins and the PCBs and the bisphenol A and the flame retardants. It just seems to be, people do not want the body burn, chemicals especially, and when consider the fact that there's such frequent exposure to the BPA that's, you know, in it's kind of a similar situation as body burn when you just get so constantly so much exposure to it. But it's the body burn chemicals where they just gradually elevate the levels of the chemicals in the body to far beyond what the daily exposure would be, that it's just such simple public health thinking to take action with this, you know, on this matter of the endocrine disrupting chemicals. I really like looking at it as dealing with endocrine disrupting chemicals rather than just POPs or carcinogens or you know, immune system problems or cognitive problems. It just seems like the way to go is look at the biggest group that exists and then start dealing with the worst actors in that group, in that big group.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that even think that they're discrete groups, that you have your POPs and those are different from EDCs. But in fact, most of the chemicals we know of are likely endocrine disruptors, and so they
exactly.
all need to be looked at under the umbrella of that. And you're absolutely right that everybody has endocrine disruptors in their bodies right now, even unborn babies and newborn babies, and most people have lots of them, up in the hundreds of them, and so that's pretty shocking. And if you go right from that to the point of prevention, then obviously reducing your exposure would be the way to go. And I think we're getting to the point where we're really getting some clear messages and on how to do that. And it doesn't have to be expensive. I think there's some people that say, well, I can't afford to buy organic and I can't afford to buy the special water bottles. But there are simple things like making sure you dust your house frequently, because so many of these chemicals end up in your house dust. And that's where your children breathe them. They're crawling on the ground and they get circulated up into your respiratory system. And, you know, dusting with a wet cloth frequently, that's just good advice, you know, to reduce your exposure.
Yeah, it certainly is. And this thing of just maybe starting out with not consuming the most heavily animal fat-containing foods that are around, mm-hmm. cutting out the hot dogs and the hamburgers, and then maybe looking at the low-fat and no-fat chicken. And there's so many options that exist. There's no-fat milk. There's no-fat yogurt. And there's so many options that people can have now, and then they would not have the risk of these chemicals that they're harmful, and that there's clearly harm taking place with the exposure to all of them. So the only way to deal with it is just start cutting back on the exposure to the worst of them.
Yeah. I think
I really appreciate your assistance with this, and it's just nice to know that the Endocrine Disruption Exchange is out there and in doing its educating. I keep seeing how that your group is now focusing on the fracking, and that's just one more big dose of chemicals, including many endocrine disrupting chemicals. How's that going along?
Well, it's going well. Business is good. There's certainly a lot to address as this boom continues. One of the reasons that we're so connected in this area of the fracking is because that's where all these endocrine disrupting chemicals originate. They come out from underground during the extraction, the burning, the processing of fossil fuels through natural gas, through coal and oil, all of it. They get these benzene ring-based chemicals, a lot of them are, and develop these other synthetic chemicals that are then endocrine disruptors. And so there's sort of this root connection there. And now we're starting to see reports of endocrine disruptors in the water near natural gas operations, and then also effects being shown. There was this very good study that came out last year showing congenital heart defects. So babies being born with congenital heart defects were more likely to live near natural gas wells. Mm. And so this merging of our gas work and our endocrine disruption work is really coming together right now.
Yeah, it's very clear that the use of the petrochemicals prior to the fracking was the source of the POPs. It was this large quantity of a feedstock for making chemicals, as you say, with these benzene rings. And now with the fracking and the continuing bringing of the hydrocarbon product up with the natural gas, but then in addition also the endocrine disrupting chemicals that are used to frack the wells. It's quite this extreme, really, of going on and on with the petrochemical industry creating harmful chemicals and poisoning the environment and our bodies with those chemicals. And I'm hoping that as this kind of comes to a head, so to speak, that there would be some huge changes in how, you know, chemical production occurs and how corporations behave in the, you know, the milieu of the whole big picture on public health and individual health and all of our health.
Yeah, I mean, we just can't live in a world where the bottom line is economic. You know, it's got to be based on health and wellness, you know.
Health is so much more valuable. I just encountered in so many instances, health has, there's no price can be put on it, and there's got to be a way of making health the number one priority in the economics, in everything, in all the decision-making. Environment and health should be just right up there at the very top. And so that we would have it right, we just finally get it right.
Well, one of our initiatives that's in the very early stages of forming, but we've been talking about it a lot over the last couple of years, is pushing for a health protection agency, a national health protection agency. We don't actually have that. We have the Environmental Protection Agency, we have the FDA, we have the CDC, but we don't really have a group that is there to protect, you know, bottom line is human health.
Sure.
And that would be a good place to put this educational campaign on EDCs and reducing exposure.
You certainly would. Well, I really appreciate your expert assistance with just another little piece of education on the endocrine disrupting chemicals. I hope you are enjoying your summer, and I'm thinking that we've got a good point to wrap this up.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. It's been nice talking with you.
I'm hoping you know, things are going to go greater and greater for all your work you're doing in the fracking, because that's, you know, it's got to be brought to an end. Thanks a lot for all the work that the Endocrine Disruption Exchange and you do on the fracking and on the EDCs, the whole big picture on the EDCs.
You're welcome, and thank you for sharing it with your audience.
Yep.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, Carol. This has been Grassroots Environmental Protection Radio. My name is Donald Hussig. I'm the director of Cancer Action New York. We're taking small steps. We're doing the best we can to raise public awareness about how people can take control of their lives and minimize their exposure to harmful chemicals. And the big group of harmful chemicals we've been talking about today are the endocrine disrupting chemicals, the EDCs, which include dioxins, PCBs, bisphenol A, flame retardants, many chemicals that we're exposed to on a regular basis through food, through water, through touching things like cash register receipts. Time has come for a huge change in what's happening, and the first big change can come from the educational outreach that makes it clear to every person in America that people are being harmed by their exposure to endocrine-disrupting chemicals, and that people get the names of the chemicals and how the exposure takes place, and then people can start stopping their exposure to these chemicals.